This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. The modern Olympics stand out as a rare opportunity for the world to come together for a show of national pride and competition. But the International Olympic Committee has decided that in the 2018 Winter Olympics, Russia will not officially participate in either of those ideals. On Tuesday, IOC President Thomas Bach announced that the Russians are banned for cheating.
The report clearly lays out an unprecedented attack on the integrity of the Olympic Games and sports. The report includes in particular the manipulation of the anti-doping laboratory at the Olympic Winter Games Sochi 2014. The IOC Executive Board, after following a due process, has issued proportional sanctions for this systemic manipulation while protecting clean athletes.
That was Thomas Bach, the president of the International Olympic Committee. Now, select and invited Russian athletes will be allowed to compete, but not under the Russian flag. It's a bit of a body blow for President Vladimir Putin, who's invested a lot in Russia's Olympic teams. The Sochi Games were shaping up to be one of his crowning moments on the world stage. Putin has said this week's move by the IOC was, quote, totally scripted and politically motivated, unquote. Joining us by phone to begin this conversation is Edward Lozansky, the president of the American University in Moscow and a professor at the National Research Nuclear University and Moscow State University. Professor Lozansky, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Give us a sense of how everyday Russians are reacting to this ban.
Well, all of them kind of anticipating this decision by International Olympic Committee because it was all in the news, and there were calls for boycott. But and actually, one of the political leaders from Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, he actually said, even before this decision by Olympic Committee, he said, Russia is going to boycott, at least Chechnya, Chechen athletes are going to boycott. But then something happened, like deja vu, the same thing what happened in December when Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats, and Michael Flynn called Russian ambassador asking Russia not to overreact. I don't know who called Russian ambassador now. Of course, it's a joke. But nevertheless, after Putin got to the microphone, he said, calm down. It's okay. He admitted, yes, we did something wrong. And we're going to participate. At least athletes can do whatever they want. We will not discourage them from attending. And things are kind of calmed down.
So I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Vladimir Putin acknowledged that the Russians did cheat and accepted the punishment?
Yes, but not on the side of the Kremlin. And this is specifically stated by Sam Schmidt, who is head of the IOC Commission, that yes, there was some cheating, but not traces are not going straight to the Kremlin. It was on the local level, and Putin said, yes, this is what happened.
So he didn't acknowledge a state-sponsored cheating program, but that there were Russians who cheated, but not the nation of Russia that cheated.
Not the government of Russia. Yeah, right. Some bureaucrats, and everyone knew this is not a secret. So it's also a very skillful policy of the International Olympic Committee. I have to give them the credit. Because, first of all, they said that Kremlin was not involved. Then they allowed use word Russia, because on this new uniform, they will say Olympic athletes of Russia. So it's not just simply kind of a uniform with no signs.
Right.
And then another thing is, which is very important, that if everything goes well, at the end, there will be like a final ceremony, conclusion ceremony, they will be allowed to carry a Russian flag. So all those compromises, I think, led to the decision by Putin and, of course, eventually by everyone else that Russians will go and they'll obey all the rules. Official decision has to be done on December 12th, but more or less one can predict that this is the way it's going to be.
We're speaking to Edward Lozansky, the president of American University in Moscow, also a professor at the National Research Nuclear University and Moscow State. Professor Lozansky, why do the Olympics mean so much to the Russian people? Or maybe I should back up a step. As an American who watches the Olympics, it seems to me that the Olympics mean a lot to Russia. Am I viewing this correctly? Do the Russians view the Olympics as particularly important as a point of national pride?
Yes, but yes, it's true. Maybe it goes back to USSR, because when the Soviet Union really didn't have too many achievements, except ballet and, you know, sport, you know, and missiles. So now probably Russia has more achievements, but still this pride, of course, exists. But it's not only Russia. I think every country kind of, you know, is rooting for its own team. And I think the United States is doing as well. Maybe not so, not such a heated atmosphere, but still, Olympics, it became, unfortunately, it's part in politics now, so now intertwined. And now, in addition, we have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So when you have politics, sport, and money all involved into one thing, then, of course, one can expect many dirty tricks. And, well, it's not only Russia. Other countries, maybe not on the same scale, but other countries are doing the same.
Do you think that politics were behind this ban against Russia?
Well, to some extent, because this the guy who actually was main witness, he was the one who was selling those drugs to Russian athletes. And then when he was caught, he defected, and he bought all this thing. So he is the main kind of witness, and he's testifying, and he is now kind of a hero in the media.
So the guy who was responsible for this doping kind of turned state's evidence and then kind of ratted on the people who were his clients.
Mr. Rodchenko, right. He actually was one involved in this. But now with Russia's bad boy, and Russia is responsible for everything, every bad thing that's taking place in the world, Russia is responsible. Of course, Russians feel offended, and they thought that this is part of the game. But I think Putin played very skillfully. He calmed things down, and the Russians will go, and they will see how well they will perform, because many of the gold medalists, those who were supposed to get gold medals, probably will not be allowed to take place. So I'm pretty sure Russia will not be the winner, but he still probably will make top five.
And briefly, Ed, before I let you go, one day after the ban was announced, Vladimir Putin announced that he was going to run for re-election. Any connection there?
Well, I think it's a coincidence, but in general, if you conceive of the reaction, his popularity, he is now like over 80%. And when he said that Russian athletes are going to go to Korea and the government will not object, of course, now on December 12th, I can predict with 100% probability that all athletes who are prepared to go and who will be allowed to go, because they still have to prove that they never use drugs, they will go. So things are not as bad as one could predict it.
Edward Lozansky of American University in Moscow, National Research Nuclear University, and Moscow State University. Professor Lozansky, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
So what does this decision mean for the games in Pyeongchang, South Korea next year and beyond? Doping is not a new problem, and Professor Lozansky is right. Russia is by no means the only offender. So let's zoom out a bit, and we'll incorporate your questions and comments as well. Joining us from WPSU Public Radio at Penn State is David Walachinsky, the president of the International Society of Olympic Historians. David, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much.
Joining us from WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago is Nancy Armour, a columnist for USA Today Sports, who has been covering the Olympics for quite some time. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And joining us in Austin, Texas is Thomas Hunt, an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Health Education at the University of Texas at Austin. He is the author of Drug Games, the International Olympic Committee and the Politics of Doping, 1960 to 2008. Thomas, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Nancy, let me start with you. Can you describe exactly what the sanctions are that the IOC handed down? Have I articulated that correctly, or is there more to them?
There are a couple more things, but you mentioned the primary one, which is that the athletes from Russia will be not allowed to hear their anthem if they win a gold medal. They will not be able to have their flag. They'll be known as the Olympic athletes from Russia. In addition, the head of the Russian Olympic Committee, Alexander Zhukov, has been suspended, banned. He's not allowed to go to Pyeongchang. Lifetime bans were imposed on the former sports minister, Mutkov, and then the deputy sports minister, Yuri Nagorniak. They were in charge of the the Sochi doping program, for lack of a better word. So they have been banned for life by the International Olympic Committee. Russia's also been fined money that will be put toward doping. It's really kind of a nominal fine. So, but the big thing is, obviously, that the athletes will not be allowed to compete under their flag or hear their anthem in Pyeongchang.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about the Olympics, about doping, about Russia's role or any nation's role in keeping the games clean. Does this decision make any difference to you if you're looking forward to the 2018 Winter Games? Let us know. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Thomas Hunt, talk about what led up to this decision, the investigation that went into catching this doping program.
It's been a long time. It was a very long set of events with a lot of players, a number of different independent investigations and reports. Back in December 2014, there was a German documentary put together after a Russian athlete and her husband, a member of the Russian anti-doping agency, she got in trouble for doping herself, and then she started to record her interactions with sports officials in Russia. And she handed those over to the German documentary makers, and they produced a film arguing that there was a vast doping program in Russia that nobody was knowing about.
Thomas, we should also clarify exactly what we mean by doping. I have heard that term used specifically to refer to taking EPO, erythropoietin, which increases the capacity of oxygen in your red blood cells. I think people use that term doping to mean everything from taking anabolic steroids to blood doping to any number of things. What specifically do we mean by doping? Is it a practice? Is it a drug? Is it a substance? What is it?
I think that actually goes to a heart of a question that I'd have later in this program. To some extent, I doped this morning. I took caffeine. I drank coffee. And enough caffeine is actually put on the doping list. You can get in trouble for it. So it's a very broad definition, and it's tough to figure out why exactly one thing can get you banned and something else can't. Another example would be creatine, which you get every day if you eat red meat. It helps you train. And why is that allowed, and why is something else like anabolic steroids banned? There's probably a difference in their effectiveness, but to some extent it's a very loose definition as to what doping means. But you're right. Traditionally it means taking a banned substance to improve your performance.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. David Walachinsky, I wonder if you can answer this question from our listener, Alice. Alice tweeted, "I have never heard of an entire country being excluded from the Olympics." David, is there any precedent for this decision from the IOC?
Well, countries have been banned from the Olympics, such as South Africa, because of their racial policies. But this is the first time it's happened because of doping. And I would like to clarify something that Mr. Lozansky said. He said that the Schmidt Committee from the International Olympic Committee absolved the Kremlin, absolved the leadership of the Russian government from involvement in this issue. That's not what it says. If you read it carefully, it says, "We did not find evidence." And I think this is what we call, and what we've called since the days of Ronald Reagan, plausible deniability. The people that Ms. Armour mentioned, Mr. Mutko, Nagorniak, who were banned, they were put in place by Vladimir Putin. There is no way that this was done without Vladimir Putin's initiative and approval.
We've heard from a number of you who are personally affected by doping in the Olympics, including the mother of an Olympic athlete. She left this note in our inbox.
Hello, I'm Ruthie from Aspen, Colorado, and I am a parent to a U.S. cross-country ski team athlete, and this will be his third Olympics. We have survived years of being demoralized by Russian athletes that are known dopers and have robbed our son, as well as many other skiers, from their honestly won medals. The IOC is known for its indifference towards doping, and that the head of the IOC has a cozy relationship with Russia. Why are these same known Russian athlete dopers allowed to compete right now at the World Cup level in Europe in FIS races And then they will be allowed to go before a panel that will be subjective about allowing them to compete in Pyeongchang. Thank you.
Ruthie, thanks for calling in. FIS, by the way, is the International Ski Federation. It's kind of like the FIFA for international skiing. Nancy Armour, what about that? I can only imagine that a number of athletes who do not participate in doping, or at the very least who haven't been caught, are probably thrilled to hear about this decision about Russia, maybe even that it's been a long time coming.
And that is very much the sentiment. You know, the athletes will talk a lot about that they control only what they can control, their training, their preparation, et cetera. But, yeah, I mean, it's disheartening when you step to the start line and you know that you are not playing on a level playing field. That said, one of the interesting things is I talked to a couple of athletes, U.S. athletes, after the ban was announced on Tuesday, and they also expressed, you know, sorrow or, you know, they felt badly for the Russian athletes who don't cheat. And there's also a component of, in a lot of ways, the Russian athletes weren't given a choice. This was a program that was, as Mr. Walashinsky said, handed down from on high. You don't say no when your country says you have to dope. Or if you do, then you're not going to be an Olympic athlete anymore. So, yeah, there is a measure of satisfaction. You know, I think all of the athletes would like there to be a world in which doping didn't exist or it wasn't present in high-level competition. But, you know, I think we all know that that day, even with this ban, this doesn't end doping. It just kicks out some of the people who have done it, who have proven to have done it.
Right.
But there's still going to be people competing who are not clean in Pyeongchang.
And Thomas, I know our time is short before we have to pause, but we should be clear. The accusation against Russia is not just doping. It's also in rigging the test results that they schemed to get around the system, right?
That's exactly right. They figured out a way to circumvent the doping protocols. For example, there are A and B tests, and this is all very technical, but the bottles are sealed in the Bs to where they're not supposed to be able to be opened, as proof that there is a pure test there. And they found a way to get into the bottle and replace it with clean urine.
Nicole wrote on our Facebook page, can the federal government prohibit an athlete from going to the Olympics if the country hosting the Olympics is not under a travel ban? Do federal dollars pay for athletes to compete? I thought it was pretty independent, at least in the U.S. Nicole, I think, is referring in part to comments from the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, about whether or not it would be safe for Americans to go compete in Pyeongchang. We'll talk a little bit more about that and about what this means for the future of the Olympics with David Walachinsky, Nancy Armour, Thomas Hunt, and you. We'll keep going in a moment. Stay close. Back now to our conversation about Russia and the Olympics with David Walachinsky, the president of the International Society of Olympic Historians, Nancy Armour, a columnist for USA Today Sports, Thomas Hunt, an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Health Education at UT Austin, and with you. Plenty more time to get in your questions and thoughts. Email 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Lou wrote us to say that our earlier guest, Ed Lazansky, was not telling the truth. Lou writes, the Russians have made sure to hide the truth from their own population, blaming the West and making no admissions. Russian behavior is utterly disgraceful and corrodes the meaning of competition. The evidence is very clear. And John wrote on our Facebook page, perhaps if they, meaning Russia, perhaps if they would lay off the mafia-like mentality, crap like this wouldn't happen. David Walachinsky, there is something about the behavior of a country vis-a-vis the Olympics that kind of paints a larger picture about how people see them, whether it's Germany in 1936 with Jesse Owens or South Africa with apartheid or the Russians right now.
Well, I think it's important to understand that this issue is completely unrelated to what we now call new Cold War issues and Russian hacking. This is totally unrelated. Of course, Vladimir Putin would like you to think that this is everybody's gang, the West is ganging up, but it's not the truth. And the other thing is that I believe that Putin's actions are aimed at the domestic audience. just as the Chinese dictators, I also write about dictators, and the Chinese government does the same thing. They're not trying to make a position in the world, but to impress their own people. And when Russia did so poorly at the Vancouver Olympics, Putin stepped in and said, we're hosting the next Winter Olympics. We have to win the most gold medals.
Vancouver was 2010, right?
2010, and so Sochi was 2014. So this doping program began in 2011, not surprisingly. And so for him, he could now say, I brought you the Olympics, I brought you the most gold medals, I brought you the most total medals. That is his aim, the domestic audience.
Marilyn in Bowie, Maryland, which is not far from here, emailed, what disturbs me most about doping is that it taints the performance of athletes who compete cleanly. And Thomas Hunt, I wonder if you could respond to Marilyn. Marilyn writes, after the Rio Olympics, a friend asked me if I thought whether or not swimmers like Katie Ledecky and Michael Phelps doped. No system is perfect, but the rigorous testing that the U.S. Olympic Committee put athletes through makes it difficult to cheat and not get caught. And there's absolutely no evidence of a pervasive state-backed doping scheme in the U.S. Russia's doping misdeeds make it that much more difficult because it unfairly sows seeds of doubt about our own athletes. Thomas?
I'm not sure if it does sow seeds about our own athletes just specifically. I think it sows doubts about the entire system of sport internationally. This looks to me, I wonder, why do we love sport so much? We have this idealistic view of it, that it's something pure and something to be cherished. And the more I learn, the more I become a cynic. I think it's also something to think about that the degree to which WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, the amount of money that they spend and the degree of invasiveness of how they monitor athletes, it is incredibly invasive. And do we really want to cherish something that requires that degree of oppression, of monitoring, in order to, out of fear, get athletes to not use drugs?
Elaborate on that a little bit, Thomas. What about the anti-doping regimen is it that you find so oppressive?
For example, there's a whereabouts system where you have to say where you'll be at certain points so that you can be tested. They can show up at your door at that time, and require you to give over bodily fluid after races. If you win, they'll go in the stall with you and watch you physically urinate. And
they want to walk in the bathroom and watch me pee.
Exactly. That's exactly
Why?
What they do. Well, to ensure that you're not high, you don't have a bag of clean urine in your sock, and we'll then pour that in the bottle. In addition, there's been huge amounts of legal and investigative efforts, millions of dollars spent over the last several years on just this Russian issue, and that's a whole lot of money and a whole lot of intrusiveness. I get why it's become this way. But it makes me wonder, why do we have this view of sport as something so pure?
Nancy Armour, I have to say, Thomas is making a point that a number of people have made over the years. Granted, the idea that the Russians would scheme to get around the testing system is one matter. But this whole question of what constitutes doping, what constitutes cheating, that's a touchy one. I mean, the same substances that we now consider to be cheating, some of them were created for athletes to compete in the Olympics, and even Americans use those with no impunity. I wonder where you see the debate over doping going from here, especially because it is so contentious.
Well, and it's an interesting point, too, because you talk about, when we talk about doping, it is performance-enhancing drugs or rigging testing systems. But one of the things that we've not even touched upon is, you know, doping in terms of technology. Right now, some of the biggest shoemakers are creating shoes and trying to, I don't want to say rig a race, but set up a race that would allow a marathoner to break the two-hour mark just because they want to see if it can be done. you know, athletes are always looking to build a better mousetrap in terms of their equipment if they are participate in a sport where equipment is used. So you look at all of these things, and yes, athletes are always looking for an edge. The question is, you know, we have this system set up, and by we, I mean the sporting community, the Olympic Committee, society in general, have decided that performance-enhancing drugs are bad, that that crosses the line from sport to cheating. And if we have determined that, then you do have to have a system in which to ensure that the people who are competing are playing by the rules. And, you know, one thing I do think we need to look at is the case of Russia here is special because it was a state-sponsored program. This was not a random athlete here or there or coach encouraging his or her athletes to dope. It was the government funding this program, creating this program, organizing this program. Russia's not the only country that does that. And there, every country that competes is going to have athletes who dope. The United States has had that too. Lance Armstrong, Marion Jones, just to name two of them. So, you know, this is an issue that goes beyond Russia. What sets Russia apart is who was involved in it and who coordinated the program.
Interesting you mentioned Lance Armstrong. Caleb thought of that as well in his comment on our Facebook page. Caleb writes, Americans are fooling themselves if they think that Russian athletes are the only ones that are doping. When you compete at that high of a level of athletics, everyone in your sport is on some sort of performance-enhancing drug. Look at Lance Armstrong and the Tour de France. During the years that Lance competed, going back and testing samples from all those athletes in the field, they had to go to the 14th or 15th place to find someone that did not test positive for performance-enhancing drugs. Does it make sense to anyone that competitive cycling is the only sport where the top of its field is full of doping athletes? Thomas Hunt, what about that? Is this just something that we have to accept as the reality for sporting, as the reality for anyone who seeks to compete at the top of an elite sport?
I think we need to be careful not to automatically assume that every good athlete is using drugs. I think that would be a real mistake. That said, I think that it is true that performance-enhancing drugs are very much a part of high-level sporting, and it's not going to go away. If we've chosen that performance enhancement is a bad thing that can't be allowed, I don't see much choice other than to have the type of system that we put in place, as Nancy said. Then again, I would argue that there might be a comparison to, for example, the drug war in the United States. I'm not sure that the policies we put in place have actually worked. Americans haven't stopped using drugs, even though there are all sorts of investigations by law enforcement authorities. I'd like to know if there might be a more effective way. The other proposal I would have is that if we, in the end, have to admit that clean sport is impossible, I'd at least like to have healthy sport, to where you can make sure that the athletes aren't going to die or suffer a major medical problem. And there might be other ways of doing that other than the type of regulatory system based on law enforcement and bans that we have now.
We should also bear in mind the Olympics are certainly about more than just the sporting events themselves. That's kind of the focus of another voicemail that came into our inbox.
Hi, this is Jan from Maryland, and I'm calling in response to your request for stories about the Olympics. We can all agree that the Olympics are the convergence of brilliance, athleticism, and politics. But I'm here to tell you that when you attend the Olympics, as I did in Vancouver in 2010, there's only one thing that's recognized, and it's unity. The first gold medal won was by a Canadian. And in the village, everyone stopped, watched the ceremony, and sang in unison the Canadian national anthem. It was a moment to remember, and if only the rest of us in the world could exhibit the same type of unity day in and day out, we'd be in a good place.
Jan, thanks for sending that message. I gotta say, David, I'm really jealous every time I hear someone describe going to the Olympics. I am dying to go to the Olympics one day because of what Jan described. And I wonder how much we might consider that being at risk because of cases of doping like this, or whether or not people just kind of go to the Olympics anyway. We just accept it as kind of the cost of having the games.
Well, I've been to 17 Olympics, and I work as a radio commentator for Westwood One, and I'll be in South Korea, I hope, if everything works out. And it is a wonderful atmosphere. The Rio Games, for example, were unbelievably poorly organized. But to be around the people of Rio, the Brazilian people, was absolutely wonderful. And it is a great atmosphere when you see people from all over the world. I mean, frankly, I don't know how it affects other people, but my favorite part of the Olympics is the Parade of Nations, particularly the Summer Olympics, when all of a sudden you see people from 200 countries in one place and not killing each other.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Nancy, I'd love to get your thoughts on America's participation in the Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Todd tweeted, will U.S. athletes participate given Nikki Haley's recent comments about the tension on the Korean Peninsula? Just by way of context, Fox News asked Nikki Haley, who is the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, whether the U.S. would be able to compete in next year's Winter Olympics. Ambassador Haley said it's an open question, but she said that in the talks that they're having, it's about how to protect U.S. citizens in the area, presumably regarding the threat from North Korea and its ambitions to launch a nuclear missile. Nancy, what about that?
Well, for the ambassador to say that is either pure ignorance or posturing or a mix of both. The American athletes are going. The U.S. Olympic Committee has been asked about this repeatedly. We had a summit with them at the end of September out in Colorado, or in Park City, I'm sorry. And they maintained several times that they have been talking with the State Department, working with the State Department, working with the general who's in charge of the U.S. forces on the Korean Peninsula. There are not security concerns in terms of keeping American athletes safe. If you talk to any of the athletes, they'll say that they're going. And if you look at the history of the Olympics, and David can speak to this even more, there's always something. In Rio, it was Zika. In Sochi, it was the Black Widow suicide bombers. In, I don't think we had anything in Vancouver. Athens was the first games after 9/11, and there were fears about first summer games after 9/11, and there were fears about terrorism. Same thing with Salt Lake City. The games end up being the safest place in the world. So for a government official to say that, oh, it's still an open question, that's simply ludicrous.
Let's get to a few more of your comments before our time is up. Michael emailed, it seems that the Olympics have lost the vision often associated with their origin. It was my belief that the Olympics were an opportunity for countries to set aside nationalism and allow their best athletes to compete as individuals. Banning a country is contrary to this principle. Ali tweeted, the Olympic Committee is corrupt. They did not ban the Saudis for openly violating the Olympic Charter by banning women's sports. I know this because I tried to make this case with them, and they showed me the door. Gina in Cincinnati wants to play a little devil's advocate, and Thomas Hunt, I wonder what you think of Gina's argument. She writes, is there really a level playing field without doping? What about less advanced countries' lack of nutrition, exercise equipment, science? Has it ever been a level playing field?
That's a very good point. So if you train in the United States and you have the very best trainer in the world, you've got a better opportunity than if you're training in a poor country without a lot of support and a lot of money. That's absolutely true. I would also go back to the point about there are other ways to gain performance enhancement without being banned. So, for example, LASIK eye surgery in sports that require great eyesight, that is a huge advantage. And we can go on and on with that. Tiger Woods has had LASIK. Baseball players, one of the most important reasons that they're great at their sport is eyesight. So I think that's a very good point, that it is not a level playing field. On the other hand, society has made the decision that performance enhancement through drugs is simply unacceptable. So, I think it's a good thing to debate that question.
Before we go, a number of you have acknowledged the documentary Thomas Hunt mentioned. Charlie tweeted, I recommend the documentary Icarus, an enlightening feature on the Russian doping scandal. David Walachinsky, we're low on time, but I wonder, what do you think Russia has to do to get back in the good graces of the International Olympic Committee? Briefly, before we're out of time.
Well, the IOC has already said they have to acknowledge what they've done, and they have to make available to the IOC the doping samples that they've kept hidden, and they have to prove that their current doping facilities are open and can meet the international standards.
And Nancy Armour, do we see that happening?
Do I see all of it happening? No, but I think given the laxness of the ban that was actually imposed, I think we'll see the Russian flag actually at closing ceremony. I think that this was somewhat of a slap on the wrist, and it's going to be a very short period of exile for the Russians.
Nancy Armour is a columnist for USA Today Sports. Nancy, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
David Walachinsky is president of the International Society of Olympic Historians. David, thank you.
Thank you.
And Thomas Hunt, associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin. His book is called Drug Games, the International Olympic Committee and the Politics of Doping, 1960 to 2008. Thomas, thank you.
Thank you.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.